Good evening. I'd like to welcome you this evening to the candidate forum for the 20th State Senate District. Tonight's forum is sponsored by WMUK, Western Michigan University's public radio station, and the Friends of WMU, a nonpartisan political action committee. I want to start off by thanking the candidates for agreeing to participate this evening in this dialogue about some very important issues that are facing us in Kalamazoo and the state of Michigan. And I also want to thank you all for coming this evening as well. We really kind of depend on your participation tonight. We've handed out some cards, and we hope that you would write some questions for the candidates. As we go through tonight's forum, if you just hold those up, if a question comes to you, we'll collect those and bring those down forward. Tonight's moderator for this evening is Gordon Evans, who is a producer and a news reporter for WMUK Radio. And Gordon will explain tonight's ground rules and how the debate will operate. Gordon?
Thanks, Greg, and thank you for coming out. The ground rules for tonight, each candidate will have 1 minute for opening statement. So you'll have 1 minute for your opening statement, then we'll have 90 seconds for each question. Each of you will answer all of the questions that we have tonight. We'll vary the order as we go along. A candidate can be asked a follow-up question at my discretion. At that point, you'd have an additional 30 seconds to answer that, and candidates will have 1 minute for closing statements at the end. And please keep your questions coming if you have them. We'll get to them shortly. But let's begin with opening statements. And Sean McCann, you will begin. You have 1 minute for your opening statement.
Are these working? Are we using audio? Yeah. I can't quite hear. So, good evening. I'm Sean McCann. I'm a state representative from Kalamazoo. I have been a native of Kalamazoo for 25 years, very proud to have come here to attend Western Michigan University. And I immediately, even behind this building, got involved in solving problems on campus. There was a path that wasn't lit that ran from the valleys to the business college up here, and worked with that in student government to fix problems on campus. Since that time, I've become a neighborhood leader in Kalamazoo. I worked for the American Red Cross as a fundraiser, and now as a state representative for the last two terms. And there's more work to do in Michigan. There are issues of fairness and equality and issues at the state that need to be addressed, and I think you'll find that when you evaluate my values and my platform, that it is the best alignment with Kalamazoo County to be your next state senator, and I ask for your vote. Thank you.
Lawrence Winke, your opening statement. You have 1 minute.
I'm Lawrence Winke. I graduated from Western in 1967 and felt that my education in the business school here prepared me well for my life as a leader of Winke Greenhouses. We have three locations in Kalamazoo and one in southern Georgia, so we grow a lot of plants and sell them to a lot of customers, and we do that quite well. But about 18 years ago, I was asked to run for a county commission seat, and I immediately said yes, and quite frankly, I didn't know where the county commission met or who my county commissioner was. Went on to be a county commissioner for 8 years, 3 years as county board chairman, as Dave Maturin is right now. And then the seat in the House of Representatives opened up. I ran for that. I served in the House of Representatives for 6 years, term limited out by our Constitution. Went back to the family business, but certainly stayed involved and connected to the political world. And would like to take my unique combination of private sector business and political experience to Lansing and influence public policy of the state of Michigan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Margaret O'Brien, your opening statement. You have 1 minute.
Thank you. I am State Representative Margaret O'Brien, and perhaps the most important thing you need to know about me is I'm a mom of two college students and a wife. Family means everything to me. Having grown up in this community my entire life, I learned the value of hard work on the farm. And if that wasn't enough, I detasseled corn for 3 summers. And I learned all about working hard to chase your dreams. Having grown up in a family where a high school diploma was a crowning achievement, I was taught to chase a college degree, and I was the first in my family to graduate. And that's what the attitude that I bring to public service and to the community is, a can-do attitude. When I see a barrier, I see it as a temporary thing. And how do we work around it? How do we overcome it? And whether it's when I was a social worker or in my real estate community where I serve as a real estate agent or as a state representative, it's all about finding solutions to real problems that exist for our community. Thank you.
We'll move on to questions. Lawrence Winke, you will go first for the first question. Step up to the microphone, please. You'll get 90 seconds. As you look out to 2025, what problems do you think the legislature will have solved?
Out to 2025. I think Michigan's economy will be doing well because the private sector will do well, will adjust to an economy, a worldwide economy where products are built in many different places and sold in many different places. I think there will always be budget issues in Lansing. There never will be enough money to go around. There will always be a fight over the money, which there has been for a long, long time and continues to be. I expect Michigan to get to be a better and better place. I expect our nation to be a better place. I walked around this campus recently for Bronco Bash, and I was impressed with the changes here. I think that the campus looks dramatically better than what it did when I left. I think the state of Michigan will be much better. The city of Detroit is going to come together and be a successful rebuilding, from what I can tell. And sorry, what time do I have? 15 seconds. All right. I'm optimistic that Western will be here and will be bigger and better, as will the lives of many of us. On the other hand, a lot of our young people are going to struggle in the new world because they're not as prepared for it as what they need to be. Thank you.
Margaret O'Brien, same question for you. 90 seconds to respond. As you look out to 2025, what problems do you think the legislature will have solved?
Well, 2025, I hope, is a great year. I'm hoping that my two college student kids are going to be married, maybe having grandkids. But I think that Michigan's going to be a different Michigan than what we know today and what we know yesterday. I remember there's many people in the room who are in my age range, and when we were in elementary school, there was one computer for the entire school. And today, I think of all the personal devices we have and how much has changed. And so what's important is that as we go towards 2025, we need to be ready to change our regulatory environment, our tax environment, to adapt whatever the emerging trends or industries are. And we're not going to be able to predict those exactly today, but we have to be willing to address them. Over the last 4 years, we have eliminated over 1,500 regulations that were antiquated, that no longer serve the purpose of why they were implemented. The legislature will need to do that, and you will need to hold them accountable for that. Additionally, over the last four budget cycles, we have passed a balanced budget early, which has not been the trend prior to that. So you will need to be holding that legislature responsible for ensuring a proper budget. So as I look to 2025, I look at making sure that we have adapted all of our regulatory structures, our taxing structures, to encourage more job growth for all the emergency industries in Michigan.
Sean McCann, same question for you. As you look out to 2025, what problems do you think the legislature will have solved? You have 90 seconds.
Thank you. I see a state in 2025 that will have invested in education more than any other state in the union. That is the top priority, and the state has gone in the wrong direction in the last 3 years. So to turn that around by 2025, where we're a beacon of education across the nation, is a top priority for me. I see a growing middle class in Michigan with a lower tax burden than what they've had put on them in the last 3 years. I see seniors feeling welcome to come back to Michigan who may have been chased away by a senior pension tax. I see our roads and bridges and infrastructure in good order, which is hopefully a sign that the legislature is able to break through its deadlock and find an equitable solution that fixes our roads and bridges. I see everyone paying their fair share of taxes for a good society. We've gotten out of balance in the last 3 years on our tax burden, and we need to right that direction. I see Michigan welcoming to all talent in 2025. We need to amend our Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to be fully inclusive, to welcome all talent to Michigan, and we need to have marriage equality for all in Michigan. And lastly, we'll have protected our environment, and our lakes, streams, rivers will all be as clean as we can possibly make them and not in danger of practices that would spoil them. Thank you.
Okay, candidates, again, just to remind you on the hand signals, two fingers means you have 30 seconds, one means 15, and then this means it's time to stop. So we will start this next question with Margaret O'Brien. With college costs and student debt being at an all-time high, what ways will you combat that so that everyone has an equal chance to obtain higher education at a fair cost?
We really need to look at the entire education system. And in fact, the governor has talked about a P20 system, which I think is important. Over the last 4 years, we have invested a lot of money in preschool education. And in fact, we are now spending more than $1 billion more on the K-12 education of state dollars than in 2010. So we have to look at the entire system, and we have to say, what do people need to be job ready, whether it's graduating from high school or graduating from college? Not every person needs a 4-year degree to get a good paying job. My 3 brothers are key examples of that. So we need to make sure our education system can adapt to what is the future that young people want. If you don't need a college degree to have your dream job, let's not make you go down that path. Let's give you the educational experience you need in high school so you can graduate ready for that job. But additionally, we have to work with our universities and our colleges to hold them accountable, because education, the cost of it, has become so much out of reach. And I see that with 2 kids in college, what a burden that is. And having put myself through college, I'm amazed at the debt that people are being forced to take on. Finally, the state needs to reevaluate their role in paying for your education and for the education of all the young people. So we have to make sure we take a multifaceted approach, because there will be no one silver bullet that will solve this problem.
Sean McCann, same question for you. With college costs and student debt being at an all-time high, what ways will you combat that so everyone has an equal chance to obtain higher education at a fair cost?
One of the ways that I would combat that issue of college affordability is by reversing the cuts to state higher education that have happened in the last 3.5 years. And I did the math in hopes that we could talk about this a little bit. So in 2011-12, the first year that we came into the legislature, a 15% cut was made to higher education institutions like Western Michigan University. Now, in the ensuing years, there's been a 3% increase, a 1.8% increase, and a 5.9% increase. But if you dig a hole and you take 15 feet of dirt out of it, and you put back 10.7 feet of dirt into that hole, that doesn't represent an increase at the end of the day. So that's the number one issue that the state has fallen behind. Tuition burdens have increased, and state aid to colleges has decreased. There's a federal issue as well. We need to be working with our federal legislators to deal with debt issues, because basically right now we have lending institutions charging a much higher rate than needs to be charged for students to find college affordability. Lastly, I'll wrap up with saying that I was fortunate enough to go to Western with a Pell Grant, and that helped me get through a lot of ways. And we've seen state tuition or state financial aid reduced over the last 3.5 years. And that's basically one way we can help our state, is by reversing the costs we put on our students as they go to college.
Thank you. And Lawrence Winkie, same question for you. With college costs and student debt being at an all-time high, what are ways that you will combat that so everyone has an equal chance to obtain higher education at a fair cost?
I barely arrived at our meeting on time tonight because I was doing my stop and talk listening tour on South Wesnage, and a lady stopped just as I was about ready to come here. I mean, not that she was in tears, but she asked me that very question. She said, "What can I do? I've got 3 kids in college. The amount of money that they're borrowing to get through college is just enormous. They're graduating with high debt." She told me that one of her loans had an interest rate of 11%, which surprised me, but she had other loans as well at lower interest rates. So this is a real problem out there for real people, and I told her that I don't have any quick, easy, simple answer to it. I think that higher education has to do what it can to contain cost. We have to do what businesses across the nation are doing, as customers more and more want more services at the same cost as last year or less. So universities have to do what they can to contain cost. I love the development that's going on around Western here. I'm proud of it, but we need to be careful what we spend our money on. Funding for education comes from the general fund, which has got a lot of sales tax money into it. We need to make sure that we collect fair and equal sales taxes on purchases that are made on the internet, as well as at our local businesses.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question, and we'll begin with Sean McCann. There has been much back and forth about whether education funding has been increased or decreased. Is funding higher or lower than it was when Governor Snyder took office, and is it adequate?
I think I just spoke to that, and I'm not sure if I transposed my numbers or not, so I'll repeat them. A 15% cut in 2011-12, the first year that I came into the legislature, and subsequent increases of small degrees the years after that, the net difference as of right now is still a minus 4.3% cut of aid to higher education in the state of Michigan. And let me say on top of that, that those cuts weren't to help balance a budget that was way out of whack. Those cuts were made to higher education. Taxes were increased on all citizens in Michigan through various ways, senior pension tax, income tax rollback freeze, to basically allow the state of Michigan to give a very large tax break to big businesses and corporations. So it's not like we had a hole that we were trying to plug. The state of Michigan, the folks in charge at the legislature, basically created a hole and plugged that hole by making cuts to other departments throughout the state. So when we get into college affordability and why our institutions have struggled and not been able to move forward effectively in the last 2 years, this is a key reason because of that. If we really believe as a state that our best investment is in our future, be it through K through 12, early childhood education, or higher ed, we need to be real and purposeful in what we say and what we do as far as state resources go.
Okay, I'm going to follow up here because I think when they say education, they're talking about more broadly K through 12. Address that in 30 seconds, please.
Sure. So 2011 saw a $470 per pupil cut to K through 12 education. That's not something that I supported, but it was in the same framework as the cuts to higher education in order to free up those funds to fund a very large tax shift onto the middle class and away from folks who are trying to make it in Michigan. And so we've disinvested in college, we've disinvested in K through 12, and we've not even gotten back to square one.
Lawrence Winke, the same question for you. There's been much back and forth about whether education funding has increased or decreased. Is funding for education higher or lower than it was when Governor Snyder took office, and is it adequate?
I've certainly been following that debate, and I believe the most accurate answer is that funding for education has increased under Governor Snyder. Not significantly. I don't think $1 billion is the right number for it. Certainly at normal increases in funding for higher education would have been there on a regular basis under previous administrations. So I think funding has increased, but it certainly isn't to the level that it used to be. When I went here to this school, I believe the taxpayer paid about 75% of the cost of me attending Western Michigan University. Today, I believe the taxpayer pays about 25% of the cost of a student attending this university, and the student and their parents have to go borrow the money to attend this and are deep in debt when they leave, unless they are privileged to get a very generous scholarship, which it seems to me there are too many scholarships where students go for virtually free to higher education. We certainly could reduce some of the benefits that employees here have of virtually free tuition for their children. We should look at everybody paying a fair share for their education in higher education. Thank you.
Let me follow up because, again, I want to focus here on K-12 education. Is the funding that the state is putting into K-12 education right now adequate, your opinion?
Yes, I think it is. I don't think Michigan right now has got a very high rate of funding for our students, particularly here in the Kalamazoo-Risa district. Here we have taxed ourselves an additional $330 per student. We're way above the average in Michigan. I think particularly here in our area, there's adequate funding, and I think there is across the state.
Margaret O'Brien, same question for you. There has been much back and forth about whether education funding has increased or decreased. Is funding higher or lower than it was when Governor Snyder took office, and is it adequate?
I share the frustration of many of you that it seems like when it's an election year, people are playing top politics with numbers. So I pulled information from the House Fiscal Agency, which is a nonpartisan agency. And since fiscal year 10, and you look at fiscal year 14, there's $1 billion more being spent on K-12. During the same time, the federal government has decreased funding to K-12 education. Again, the federal government has decreased funding to K-12 education. When you take in consideration the budget year that's upcoming, the increase of state aid to K-12 education is going to be $1.3.87 billion. I do have extra charts for whoever needs them. This also does not take in consideration the $130 million that's being poured into early childhood education. Probably one of the things that you really need to know is that when I took office, the state had over $50 billion of unfunded liabilities in the teachers' health and pension retirement systems. We are working to reduce that, and we have poured nearly $750,000 to buy down that long-term liability to make sure the promises that were made yesterday to people can be delivered. So we have been very prudent with your tax dollars, and we've been making sure we just present the numbers as is. We're not trying to politic it, not trying to sway you. Can we do more with education funding? Absolutely, and that's something we should talk about.
Well, let's talk about it for 30 seconds. If you were going to put more money into education, where do you get it from?
Well, what we have to look at is we had Proposal A, which drastically changed how we fund education, and it was in response to escalating property taxes. And that set in our Constitution how we fund education. And Lawrence was correct that here in Kalamazoo County, we do a levy of 1.5 mils for operational funds. What we're going to have to do is face the fact that we have lower birth rates, and during the recession, we saw a decline, well, an outpouring, an exporting of our young people from the K-12 education system. How do we fund when we know that our expenses don't go out as does the students who leave the classroom.
Move on to the next question, and Lawrence Wienke will begin this round. We've been talking about college. As a state senator, what would you do to provide incentives to students and recent graduates to stay in the state of Michigan?
Certainly a healthy economy is the best gift that we can give to our children. To do that, we're going to have good tax policy on our businesses and ourselves. We're going to have to focus on job creation as much as possible. It will take a good job to keep them here. I think when the World Trade Agreements were signed, I think that Michigan workers were placed at a tremendous disadvantage. They had to compete with employees in Mexico would work for $2 an hour and in China for $1 an hour. Somehow we need to keep that in mind when we make public policy that we put people at a very unfair competitive disadvantage and should probably do more to help them than what we did. A good education is of skilled trades is certainly an avenue to a good paying job. Most of us still think we need a college degree of some kind. I think simply have a growing economy. I think a place like Detroit will come back, and a lot of jobs will be created in Michigan just because Detroit becomes a healthy place, and people make healthier choices. Thank you.
Margaret O'Brien, as a state senator, what will you do to provide incentives to students and recent graduates to stay in the state?
Well, as Lawrence said, we need to make sure that we have job opportunities, whether you want to work for a company or you want to form your own company. And over the last 3.5 years, what you saw in Michigan is we leveled the playing field. Prior to me taking office, large corporations were subsidized at the expense of small family-owned businesses. We righted that ship. We said, regardless of the size of your business, this is going to be a level playing field. We have to continue to do that. We have to continue to eliminate regulations that hinder people from being entrepreneurs. We need to make sure opportunity exists. Now, for me, I am, like I had mentioned earlier, a mom of two teenagers who just started their freshman year of college. I have one who wants to go into the social work arena and one who wants to go into the business arena. We sat down and had a healthy discussion about what is your wage expectations, because you have to consider what your wage expectations are when you decide that you're going to go to college. How are we going to pay for it? Are you going to take loans? We need to make sure that what you spend is going to fit for what you hope to do. And I want both to chase their dreams, but we need to have realistic expectations. And a good job is definitely one. But my daughter, who has the servant's heart and she really wants to follow in mom's footsteps of being a social worker, I prepared her. Your earning potential won't be the same as your brother, but the job won't be any less noble. So we just have to make sure that we help our kids as they're going through this, give them the guidance so they can make the best decision for them.
Sean McCann, same question for you. As a state senator, what will you do to provide incentives to students and recent graduates to stay in the state?
There's a couple of concepts that really haven't been explored fully enough in the state legislature on this topic. One is a concept by a colleague of mine in the House called Pay It Forward, where basically you would almost, and it's a concept for a pilot program where students would basically get college free, but then could be paying it back out of wages of their future earnings. That's one concept that could be explored. I'm not saying I advocate for it necessarily, but at least it's an idea, and we need to have these ideas. Another is loan forgiveness for duration of staying in the state. You graduate with a college degree, but you've taken out loans. If the state helps forgive those loans, then you agree to stay in Michigan for a certain amount of time as part of that payback for that. But I appreciate what my colleague said about jobs. I think that is definitely something that's going to keep people here if there are good job opportunities and talent is taken up. And we have a good quality of life, vital urban centers and nice neighborhoods for people to live in. But if we know that we're going to have a high tax state for middle class families, if people find that other states are going to make it more attractive as far as their tax structure goes for young graduates to move there, that's going to be a disincentive for people to stay in Michigan. So again, we've raised taxes on the middle class in the last 3.5 years. Not we, the legislature that I've been a part of has raised those taxes. And we need to reverse that to put more money in the pockets of the middle class so that they have jobs and can fuel the economy.
Thank you. The next question will begin with Margaret O'Brien. Michigan has long experience with automobile no-fault insurance. Is it time for reform, and what should that reform look like?
I have served on the insurance committee for the last 2 terms, and we definitely need to look at our auto no fault. Today, you are paying $186 per vehicle per year for medical expenses that exceed $530,000 if you are injured in an automobile accident. Now, in your insurance bill, is additional fees for that first $530,000 of medical expenses. But we have to focus on several arenas. One is transparency. In the past, when the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Association was set up, it was set up as a private agency. We need to close that down and set up a public agency that is fully transparent. Second, we need to look at what kind of cap should we have on benefits? Because when you have an open-ended liability, it's no surprise that these rates are going to keep going up year after year. And then finally, we need to say, do we need any sort of fee scale like we do for workman's comp or for disability insurance? We need to look to see, would a fee structure benefit everybody and make sure it's a transparent system? Because, you know, when you go into the emergency room, the first question shouldn't be, were you in an automobile accident? It should be, how can I help you? And I'm not sure why it matters that when I go into an emergency room, the question is, was I in an automobile insurance? Was I in an automobile accident? Is it because they're going to charge more? I don't know. But we need to address those three factors.
Let me follow up, 30 seconds. As far as transparency is concerned, there's been some complaints that we should be able to see more of the operations of the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Association. Do you agree with that?
Only if we set it up as a public agency, because it's a private agency. So if you all of a sudden open them up to the same FOIA criteria, then we could tell every private entity, guess what? You're going to have to do the same thing. That's why we need to set it up as a public body. And it's also important to know that the auditors have audited the fund. They've looked at the books, and they have said that fund is underfunded. And so keep expecting your rates to go up. So we definitely need to close the MCCA and reopen as a public body.
Sean McCann, the same question for you. Michigan has a long experience with automobile no-fault insurance. Is it time for reform? What should that reform look like?
It's hard to know if it's time for reform because we don't have transparency into the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Association's books. auditors may get a look at those books, but the people of Michigan do not. And we can't tell whether the premiums that are being charged on your auto insurance rates are fair or not. Twice in the 90s, the MCCA claimed that they were going to be insolvent and asked the state of Michigan voters to basically support their rate increases. Those were both turned down by the voters of Michigan, and neither time did the MCCA go belly up. So you have to wonder if sometimes there might be some folks crying wolf and you can't see what your rates are being set at within the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Association. So, the other thing that happens is that Michigan No Fault is really a leader in the nation. It's one of the top programs that we have. And when you're dealing with a small percentage of people who suffer extremely catastrophic injuries in car accidents, to cap their care is truly an injustice, because $1 million cap, even a $5 million cap, is not going to address someone who is in a car accident that suffers full paralyzation, for example. So the bottom line is the MCCA can be and should be transparent. We need to have the public be able to look at the books that are there now and know whether or not those rates are being set fairly or not.
A follow-up here, 30 seconds. If you open the books and it turns out that, yes, there is a problem, how do you address it? Is it time for them some reform in terms of the unlimited cap?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, we have a problem. We have an insurance problem, particularly in the Detroit metro area, as far as uninsured drivers driving, and that's a real danger. And part of that is because of these premiums that the MCCA is charging. So I absolutely am open to doing some reform to our auto no-fault system, but we need to have that transparency before we can start the process.
Lawrence Wenke, the same question for you. Michigan has long experience with automobile no-fault insurance. Is it time for reform, and what should that reform look like?
I like Michigan's no-fault auto insurance policy. I've never had an accident in a car, never made a claim. Nobody in my family has that I'm aware of. I think it works well. I think keeping it out of the courts as much as what we do is good. I don't really know what other states do, but none of them really have copied our no-fault auto insurance in Michigan that I know of. I think what we do is a reasonable solution to a problem that used to exist where everybody was suing everybody, taking them to court. As far as the catastrophic fund goes, Representative O'Brien pointed out, every car, every licensed vehicle in Michigan pays about $190 right now into that fund. They're not even subject to the Freedom of Information Act, as far as I know. We don't really know how much money they get. We don't know who they spend it on or how they spend it. I think that we have a right to at least information about how it's done. I'm not familiar with the approach of doing away with it and forming a public body. But I certainly think that we ought to have the doors open to the catastrophic fund so we know how it's working. The legislator sitting next to me in the House of Representatives had a son going home late one night, went around a curve, ran into a tree, will need help the rest of his life. I think that's an appropriate use of public dollars to help people like that. Thank you.
Next question, we'll begin with Sean McCann. As state senator, what are you going to do to fix the roads as well as maintain them?
So everyone knows since Governor Snyder came to office that there's been a high priority on coming up with a comprehensive transportation funding solution. And in the 3.5 years I've been in the legislature, a solution has not been found yet that really addresses the need that's been stated. In fact, and most importantly, the legislature came very close to finding solutions to our roads issues this past June. The State House had sent over some bills, some of which I supported, that have languished in the state Senate to try to address our comprehensive transportation needs. The Senate was working on a deal that would be fair to all concerned. If there's going to be increased fuel taxes, perhaps, then is there going to be relief on those most adversely affected by fuel tax increases? How are we going to treat overweight trucks? How are we going to treat registration fees? All these moving factors were part of that conversation in June that got very close to a deal. Then the Senate adjourned, and we haven't come back to this issue since. I have called every day since we've adjourned for us to return to Lansing and get the job done, because that is what the citizens at the doors and on the phone calls and the letters are demanding. And I continue to say we need to go back to Lansing. That's what you hire us to do. That's the job we're supposed to do. We need to go back and do it any day, anytime, right now.
Lawrence Winkie, same question for you. As state senator, what would you do to fix the roads and maintain them?
I am not prepared to vote for a gas tax increase with what I know about the condition of the roads today and what we spend on fixing them. When you're not in the legislature, you just don't have the ability to call up the people who are professionals in this and ask them questions about how, where the money comes from and where it goes. I did do my own personal study on this. I took an average car at 15,000 miles per year, averaging 17 miles to a gallon, and I was quite surprised at how little we pay for the use of our roads. Currently, I think our roads are a tremendous bargain for us Michigan citizens. The average vehicle pays $14 per month, and state gas taxes at 19 cents a gallon pays $14 per month, and federal gas tax at 19 cents a gallon, and $8 per month in your vehicle registration fees, which averaged $95 a year. So a total of $36 a month for a total of $426 a year is all we pay for our roads to be built, maintained, snowplowed, traffic signals to work, accurate, the service that we get. So I think it's a bargain. I see construction going on all over the state of Michigan. I think it's too early to advocate for a large gas tax increase, but I'm open to a small one in the state gas tax.
Thank you. Margaret O'Brien, same question for you. As a state senator, what would you do to fix the roads as well as maintain them?
Well, I serve on the House Transportation Committee, and this has been a cause near and dear to my heart. And in fact, while in the Portage City Council, we looked at long-term solutions at funding our roads. And in fact, if you live in Portage, you pay up to 3 mils of your property taxes towards roads. What this allows the City of Portage to do is to not be held hostage to the government or state regulations as to what we think should be done with roads. So we need a multi-prong approach. One is encourage the locals to come up with a plan of what will give them the most control. Second, we need to demand more money back from Washington, D.C. We are not getting every penny that we send to them, and we need to expect it to come back. Finally, at the state, we need to look for a long-term solution that takes into account that we are having increasingly more fuel-efficient cars, alternative energy cars, so a gasoline tax is actually very aggressive, and every year has less buying power. Now, since I took office, we have been pouring more and more money into roads from the general fund. And in fact, it's a culmination of $870 million when you look at the next budget cycle from the general fund. For the current budget cycle, it's $451 million. So when we've been trying to work on long-term solutions, we have been pouring more and more money from the general fund into roads. And just as a comparison, under the previous administration, before Governor Snyder, the amount of money going into roads from the general fund, zero.
Next question, we'll begin with Lawrence Winkie. Imagine people who follow politics closely will know the answer to this, but Lawrence Winkie, do you support gay marriage?
Yes, I not only support it, I supported it in Lansing when I was there as a representative. I've supported it in and out of Lansing. And yes, the Eliel Arson Act certainly should be amended, and I hope that happens before the end of the year. Voters send me to Lansing. Why? It'll be one of the first things that I do. It is an absolute disgrace that our gay family members, friends, and neighbors do not have the same rights that the rest of us do. The Republican Party is mainly responsible for blocking these equal rights for our gay family members. Our churches use a misinterpretation of Bible verses to against our gay family members. They're simply wrong in their interpretation of those verses. I would call on them to rethink and restudy that issue. There is no reason to treat our gay family members the way that we do today. They should have the same rights as the rest of us. And I will continue fighting until they get them for those rights for our gay family members. Thank you.
Margaret O'Brien, the same question for you. Do you support gay marriage?
Well, first, I just want to say I appreciate when we're able to discuss this issue because it is a very emotional issue for so many. And with me having family members who are gay, but yet very strong faith tradition within my family, it's a very difficult issue. It's not something I support, but at the same time, I believe my faith says we have to treat all people with love, respect, and kindness. So that doesn't give anybody the license to treat people disrespectfully. And so as we discuss this issue, I'm very grateful for the respect that people show when they have differing points of view. And as long as we can keep discussing this in a respectful manner, then I think it's something that we should continue to talk about.
Let me follow up, 30 seconds. Would you support amending the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to include protections for sexual orientation and gender identity?
I'm open to it.
Sean McCann, question for you. Do you support gay marriage?
Yes. And I will expand upon that issue, that answer by saying I do also support amending the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to be fully inclusive. And I think that the courts, we've already had our Michigan judicial system overturn Michigan's ban on gay marriage. It's simply caught up in the appeals process. I'd like to see Michigan get ahead of that process and reverse our ban on marriage equality before that's resolved fully. What we have here with both Elliott Larson civil rights and with marriage equality is justice delayed and talent delayed. The latter is important because we want talent in Michigan regardless of what their personal preferences are and how they identify being irrelevant. We lose talent when we send a message that we're not a welcoming state to all comers. The latter is more important. Justice delayed, justice denied is not something that I can in good conscience allow to go on one day longer. And the faster that Michigan can reverse ourselves on this justice, this issue of human rights and justice, the better. So we should not delay. We are here. We are ready. It's just a few of the systems aren't quite caught up yet. Thank you.
Let's stick with another social issue, and we'll begin with Margaret O'Brien. Two states now allow the recreational use of marijuana, the legal recreational use of marijuana. Should Michigan reform its marijuana laws, and how should they do so?
You know, this question was asked at a previous forum, and it's an issue I don't know a tremendous amount. I haven't done a lot of research on the other states. I would want to bring together multiple stakeholders to talk about this because I do have concerns about unintended consequences. Once upon a time, smoking was considered the thing to do, and then we learned many years later about the harmful effects. And I know there have been issues about how do you ensure the quality of especially medical marijuana to make sure that the dosage the person is taking is correct, especially if it's changed depending on who's the grower. So we definitely need to bring together a stakeholder group. I would want to bring together our law enforcement community, our judges. I'd want to bring together parents. I'd want to just bring together some average citizens to really talk about this issue. I don't know a tremendous amount about what the other states do, but it's definitely a conversation I believe we should have.
Sean McCann, two states now allow the recreational use of marijuana legally. Should Michigan reform its marijuana laws and how?
Thanks for the repeat of the question because I was wanted to see if it was recreational that is the issue because you have a couple of other stages. We obviously already have medical marijuana approved. There's also perhaps an in-between step that would possibly decriminalize use of marijuana so that we don't have our prisons filling up with recreational users, basically. So I think we need to learn from Washington and Colorado and let those experiments run a little bit longer. But I think that there's a lot of promise there. And I think there's a great possibility that Michigan will move closer and closer to those kinds of models if we see that those systems are working okay and not causing undue harm. I think we need to be having a broad conversation with a lot of stakeholders, law enforcement, parents and families, as we look at what should we do over the long term. So the other thing I would say is that in my district, I respect that the city of Kalamazoo has made marijuana enforcement the lowest law enforcement priority. And a number of other communities across the state have adopted decriminalization or made it the smallest law enforcement priority. So This is a question of kind of where is the will of Michigan's people going. I'm very interested in where it goes, and I'm interested in seeing where states that have gone further than where we're at end up and how it works out for them.
Lawrence Wenke, the same question for you. Two states now allow the recreational use of marijuana legally. Should Michigan reform its marijuana laws, and how?
I would not vote to legalize the recreational use of marijuana if I had to vote on it today. I'm glad to see Colorado and Washington doing leading the way, leading the experiment that they are. I think that in a few years we'll have a chance to make a better judgment of whether we should do the same thing in Michigan. I voted for medical marijuana when it was put to a vote of the citizens of Michigan, and we approved it by a wide margin. I was one of the yes votes because I do believe some people get a great deal of medical benefit out of marijuana. I've never smoked a marijuana cigarette in my life and don't intend to, and I don't want anybody driving their car in the same direction or opposite direction I'm going in under the influence of marijuana any more so than alcohol. At work, why we don't need more people coming to work under the influence of drugs. We have that already. These are major issues for employers, and we certainly need to know what we're doing when you talk about marijuana. On the other hand, we are ruining a lot of lives by having people arrested and prosecuted over the use of marijuana. It is not, we do need to reform these laws. We do need to treat it differently. We don't want to ruin lives over this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next question now, and we'll begin with Sean McCann. How do you feel about Michigan's right to work legislation, and how did you vote on it?
Well, I didn't support the so-called right to work legislation. I think that the economic benefits that it claims to have are quite dubious. I think that the procedure by which the matter came up in the legislature was not forthright or open to full public discourse and engagement. It was handled, for example, in lame duck session, which is when it's after the election and folks have not had a chance to, either they aren't accountable for their votes anymore or the dynamics are much different than when it's before an election. But some are going to say that there was dialogue, there were hearings, but there really wasn't a full-scale and appropriate conversation about whether or not this was a good move for Michigan to make. Again, I think that the results are dubious. We haven't seen, I think, any great economic positive impact or benefit since it's been enacted. And, you know, it really goes to wrap up to an issue of fairness. Should someone benefit from negotiated benefits as an employee who doesn't basically pay into the process? Should someone basically get a free ride when they don't have to pay union dues in order to get increased compensation or benefits? That to me is basically unfair. If an employer chooses to unionize or workers at an employer choose to unionize, everyone needs to participate if they want to reap the benefits those negotiations.
Thank you. Time's up. Lawrence Wenke, how do you feel about Michigan's right to work legislation, and how would you have voted had you been in the legislature at the time?
I would have voted in support. As a matter of fact, I went to the Capitol building when it was being voted on to show support for the legislation. One of the mottos of the Libertarian Party is more freedom and less government. I think this is an example where we should have more freedom and less government. I think citizens ought to have a right to make this choice without being bound one way or the other. So I support right to work. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I believe there's over 105 or 10,000, I'm going to say teachers, MEA members, NEA members in the state of Michigan, and only about 5,000 have decided to discontinue their membership in the union because of this or after this was passed. Who knows what reasons they gave for discontinuing their membership. I don't think this will have nearly the impact on employees or employers that it was talked about. I don't think we're going to get a rush of employers moving to Michigan because of it. But it does send a message to employers that they don't have to live with the union pressures that we have in Michigan, which, quite frankly, has been quite a detriment to the economy of Michigan. in the auto industry in particular. Thank you.
Margaret O'Brien, how do you feel about Michigan's right to work legislation, and how did you vote?
I supported in favor of right to work. Federal law allows unions to decide if they're going to represent everybody or just their members. There is no state requirement that they have to represent people who do not join the union. And when you look at it, I had friends who came to me from many different walks of life. And in fact, my brother had been a union steward before. And when people complain that their unions aren't being responsive, what are their options? And this allowed them to have an option. Now, I'm a member of several trade associations, which I know are different, but to get the benefits, you have to be a member of that trade association. And I think in the long run, what this will do is it'll allow these different unions and associations to be stronger because they're going to have to earn their member support. We already have had some strong unions. The ones that weren't so strong that we were getting the most complaints on, this is the opportunity to become stronger and to really meet your members' needs.
Next question, we'll begin with Lawrence Winke. How do you feel about the tax on pension income, which was approved as part of the new budget plan in Michigan, and do you think we need to keep the tax on pension income, or should there be changes to it?
I was not there and not part of that discussion. I'm not sure how I would have voted on that, but a philosophy that I have is that, you know, why shouldn't all income be treated the same? Why do we have this maze of laws, legislation, regulations about income? Why don't we treat it all the same way? Certainly, Michigan pensioners received a very special treatment, some of the best in the nation when it came to not paying taxes on their pensions. I realize this was a shock for a lot of them, and certainly something that had been talked about for years and never done. But I would go back to what I think is a reasonable political philosophy to have, is that we will treat everybody as equally as we can. We certainly know of in the federal taxes the unequal treatment on federal revenues. We don't want that in Michigan. We had it in Michigan. I'm not sure that was the best answer to it, but we should tax everybody the same way.
Margaret O'Brien, do you think that the state should keep the tax on pension income, or should there be any changes to it?
Like Lawrence, we need to treat all income the same. Prior to the changes, if you had a 401k, pay taxes. If you're 75 years old and you're working, you pay taxes. Why is it that a pension was giving a preferential treatment that nobody else gets? Now, probably the conversation we should be having is, do we want to treat our seniors differently than other taxpayers? And if we do, how do we treat all seniors the same, regardless of where they're getting their income from? But it's very important that we have a fair system to everybody, and so that we didn't unduly harm those who had already been making plans. We allowed for complete exemption for those who are 67 and older, and then we allowed a $40,000 couple credit that they didn't have to pay in addition to their Social Security. So we did allow some credits to help offset, because we got to make sure, again, fair, flat, efficient tax system. That is what can make a successful environment. And as we see fewer and fewer pensions in the workforce, we need to make sure that all retirement income is treated the same.
Sean McCann, the tax on pension income, do you think it should be kept? Do you think there should be any changes to it?
I was proud to vote against this senior pension tax. I don't think it should be kept. And I think that it's a question of, why is this tax increase needed in the first place? Why did the state of Michigan impose a tax on seniors' pensions? What's it going to be used for? Did we get more services as a result of that? Were schools invested in more greatly because of a senior pension tax increase? My answer is no. Those increases weren't made. And what I heard just recently from Representative O'Brien was that, we made this exemption, we allowed this, but that to me sounds like a vote in favor of a tax increase. And I'm not in favor of that tax increase, and I wasn't willing to vote for that tax increase on senior citizens in Michigan. So when I'm at doors and meeting citizens throughout Michigan, they say that this wasn't fair. They weren't able to plan for it. it impacts their lives in real ways. That plus the elimination of the property tax credit, homestead property tax credit by members of the legislature has put a further burden on senior citizens in our state and basically has made Michigan unwelcome for seniors. I would repeal this tax, and I would challenge those who voted for it to admit that they voted for it.
I'll follow up here. Address the issue that Lawrence Wenke brought up, and to a certain extent Representative O'Brien, of fairness here about income, which happens to be pension income, why is that exempt as opposed to other types of income?
Well, that's because we set it up that way in Michigan, and that's what people came to expect as a part of the deal when they chose to live in Michigan or have their jobs here, is that their pension tax was going to be exempted, or their tax on pensions wasn't going to be paid. So that's an incentive, in my mind, to keep people in Michigan and shows that we're welcoming to people to retire here and live out the rest of their lives here rather than having to basically reduce their quality of life, pay more
Thank
in taxes,
you.
And want to leave Michigan.
Next question, we'll start with Margaret O'Brien. Where did you stand on the ballot initiative that would have raised Michigan's minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, and then also the bill that came up in the legislature for raising the minimum wage?
I did not support the ballot initiative, and I voted no on the bill that ultimately went in front of the legislature. I did introduce my own counterproposal to raise the minimum wage. Here's what we have to remember, and I speak from firsthand experience. My parents made minimum wage. I made minimum wage. If we want to truly help people out of poverty, we need to offer more educational opportunities, more job training. Just merely raising a minimum wage isn't going to bring people out of poverty. And we need to remember that no family should have to be living on the minimum wage. And I speak from experience, having seen this in my own family. My parents would have benefited from job retraining or further education. I was very concerned that by thinking that we're going to raise the minimum wage, we're going to solve all the world's problems. We're not. Instead, what we've done is we've introduced uncertainty into the business community. Once this is fully implemented, on an annual year, there will be a calculation in which a minimum wage will increase. So not only will the entry-level worker pay increase, but everyone up the scale is going to expect a double bump so that they can be rewarded for their time at the company. And additionally, the cost of goods and services are going to go up because no matter what type of industry you're in, wages are your number one expense. So we're just going to further increase the cost of goods and services.
Sean McCann, where did you stand on the ballot initiative to raise Michigan's minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, as well as the bill that came before the legislature?
I supported the bill that came before the legislature and passed in a bipartisan way. The ballot initiative did not have enough signatures to get on the ballot in the end, but I was proud that we were able to raise the minimum wage in Michigan to give people who might be in poverty a boost and to make sure that someone working 40 hours a week is not going to live in poverty as a result of their wages. It's a little confusing. I mean, for me, it's very straightforward for me. Do you support a minimum wage increase or not? Other proposals are confusing to me. If there were other bills to raise the minimum wage, I don't understand what that position is in regards to should the minimum wage be raised or not. It seems sort of like a halfway in between response. So to me, I think that this along with Medicaid expansion in the legislature were two of the best votes that I was happy to take in a very bipartisan fashion that I think solved a problem that everyone felt good about. It's not a perfect solution. That's what compromise is about, is when we have solutions that aren't going to make everybody happy, but address the major issue and make the majority of people satisfied when they walk away with their vote. That's a good vote for me, and I was very proud to make that vote.
Follow-up, would you have supported putting the minimum wage at $10.10 an hour as was going to be on the ballot if it had made it before the voters?
The proposal as it was a strong proposal, but I think that there were real concerns in regards to how tipped wages were handled. The predictability and the impact on businesses, should that have gone into effect right away, could have presented a real challenge for businesses. I heard that from folks who were happy with the compromise that the legislature reached, was that there was predictability in the increases that were built into the governor's proposal, and that there was predictability for tipped wages as well.
Next. I'm sorry, we've got to hear from Lawrence Wenke. Where did you stand on the ballot initiative to raise Michigan's minimum wage to $10.10 an hour and on the bill that passed the legislature?
I would have voted no on the ballot initiative to raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. That's too much. That would cause too much turmoil in the business community. If I were in the legislature, I would have voted for the raising of minimum wage that finally did pass. I think it's a reasonable amount of increase over a reasonable amount of time, and businesses, people who pay it, will have an opportunity to adjust their pricing, their cost to that minimum wage. I don't think that we should ask our lowest wage workers in our community to be the front line in fighting against increasing cost. Those of us on Social Security, Medicare, everywhere we work, we all expect some kind of a raise to compensate us for inflation. I think our minimum wage workers deserve the same thing. I supported it being indexed to inflation, although I would have indexed it to maybe half the rate of inflation, because we can't all be indexed to inflation or we'll have a lot of inflation. But I was pleased with what they did. I think it was the right thing to do, and I would have supported it. In my company, presently, what was paying a lot more than minimum wage to starting workers starting a year ago, and it has a significant impact on all of us. It will cost businesses a significant amount of money, but I think it's the right place to to handle that cost.
We'll begin this next question with Sean McCann. Do you support early voting in the state of Michigan, and would you introduce legislation to have it here?
Yes, I would support early voting and would be happy to support or introduce a proposal to do that. I also support no reason absentee voting as well, and really any measure that we can make to increase accessibility to our democracy and get more participation in it. We've come a long way, and we have a lot of technology at our disposal these days. And quite honestly, I don't see why a lot of voting couldn't even be done online with technology that we have in the near future. So to me, restricting voting to one day, having to provide a reason for absentee voting other than you're not able to make it on a particular work day. I've had people come to me and say they work 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and they have families and it's a juggle to try to get to the polls before or after. I think that a lot of people have different circumstances that maybe make it hard for them to vote on one particular day. So, early voting and accessibility is a big priority for me. I would support that fully and would like to see it come about in Michigan.
Lawrence Wenke, the same question for you. Do you support early voting in the state of Michigan, and would you introduce such legislation?
No, I think we do it about right now. I don't like early voting because poor citizens don't get the benefit of all of our TV commercials and literature that we mail out to you and show on the television set. So how can they vote accurately if they don't see and hear our commercials and get our literature? I'm laughing at it. I hope you're laughing. I think we do it about right in Michigan. Some states allow people to vote for president, have open county offices for a month. Somehow that seems to me to be unfair in federal elections, but that's the way it is. I think we do it about right now, and I'm happy with the process that we have.
Margaret O'Brien, do you support early voting in the state of Michigan, and would you introduce legislation?
I've constantly been listening to my clerks on this issue, and I think it's something that as our technology advances, it's something we should consider. But I do have concerns. When our bank accounts aren't safe and they get hacked, I worry about what could happen with online voting. Is the technology there? I don't know. We do need to continue to have this conversation. Now, interestingly enough, if you're not certain you can show up on election day to vote, just tell your clerk that. I have, when I had surgery one year and didn't know if during my recovery period I'd be able to show up. My clerk didn't ask me why I didn't know. I just said, I'm not confident I can get here on election day to vote. And they gave me my absentee ballot. So it's important for us to make sure that as we look at emerging technologies, we remember voting is very sacred, and we don't want to unintentionally cause massive problems like we've unfortunately seen with our own personal bank accounts, and we don't want our voting rights to be hacked like unfortunately some of our bank accounts have been. But I continue to listen and learn from my clerks, and will continue to rely on them for their expertise.
Follow up. If we hit a point that we had lines around the block like we've saw in some other states, does that change the calculus then in terms of thinking about people having to be in line for, 3-4 hours to vote?
I wonder why in those states, if they have lines for 3 or 4 hours, why they haven't adapted the system to have more people there who are working the polls, more machines. We are very blessed here in Michigan, and especially in Kalamazoo County, to have very well-run elections. I cannot think of an election where I've had to wait more than 2 or 3 minutes. It would be wonderful if we had so many people voting who are eligible to vote so that we could address that problem. But that becomes a worker problem.
The next question will begin with Lawrence Wenke. Gun violence seems to be an epidemic. How do you suggest that we address this problem?
Very complicated issue. I'm a Second Amendment rights supporter. I do believe that the more good people that we have with guns, the safer that we will all be. I'm not the least bit supportive of any legislation that would restrict our gun ownership rights. And I don't own a gun. It doesn't mean much to me. I don't use one. Don't have one. But I certainly had someone yesterday stop by on West Main Street who was wearing a gun on the outside of his clothing. I certainly would not want in any way to restrict him or tell him he doesn't have the right to do that. Certainly we ought to do all we can to keep guns out of the hands of people who have got criminal records. We should certainly keep them out of the hands of our children at a certain age, below a certain age. There are so many guns out there that I don't think we have any chance anymore of controlling them in the sense of keeping them out of the hands of the public or our families. I'm reasonably happy with our gun laws just the way they are right now.
Margaret O'Brien, gun violence seems to be an epidemic. How do you suggest that we address this problem?
The number one issue that I see it that we have with guns is there seems to be a lack of understanding that if you point it at someone and you fire it, they're going to die. I look at the video games that kids play, they die, they come back to life a half a second later, they have all these lives. This is a powerful weapon, and there's a lack of respect for guns. It used to be taught a respect for it. You don't touch it if it's not yours, how to handle it, how to store it. But there's so much that isn't known about it anymore. I went through the concealed pistol class, and I do have my concealed pistol license. So much of the class is about respecting that gun and not ever using it. That would be such valuable information for every single person to have. Respect for a gun, how to keep yourself safe and not use your gun. But if you are forced into a situation where that was your only option, how is that going to change your world? I encourage it for anybody who wants to learn about personal safety. You don't have to go through and get your license, but it is an amazing class about how to keep yourself safe without a gun and how to respect a gun.
Sean McCann, gun violence seems to be an epidemic. How do you suggest that we address this problem?
In the state of Michigan, not a lot of bills have come up that have dealt with guns and where they're to be used or how. But I can tell you that one bill that came up in my tenure was regarding whether or not the concealed carry law should be expanded to include bars, churches, and stadiums. There's also an issue that's tied to that related to whether or not guns should be in schools or not under the open carry law. This kind of legislation opens up a whole lot of can of worms, but I try to take my guidance from local law enforcement for the most part, and I know that at the time that bill was considered, local law enforcement said, we don't need people carrying guns in churches, bars, and stadiums. Unfortunately, that bill hasn't gone anywhere, but we still have the problem of what to do about open carry in schools that is yet to be addressed. So we have some issues that come up from time to time, and that's generally how I approach those issues.
The next question will begin with Margaret O'Brien. How would you promote clean energy in the state?
When we talk about clean energy, we have to just make sure that we're becoming fully informed about the entire process. We look at nuclear energy, which is a very efficient form of energy. But when we also look at some of our alternatives, we have to understand with some of our alternative energies that there are some components to it that do pollute the environment. Now, I'm not going to pretend that I'm a scientist, and in fact, Representative Nesbitt, who represents a portion of Kalamazoo County, is the chair of Energy and Technology and can speak much more eloquently than what I can. But as I look at the issue, I try to understand the full scale, not the 30-second view, because it's very complicated. If we just look at our fuel efficient or our alternative energy vehicles, those batteries are a pollutant to our environment. So let's look at the whole step and then look at a balanced portfolio. When it comes to energy, it should be an all of the above approach. Let's explore some of the new emerging technologies. Let's look at how we can lessen our footprint on the world. But let's also make sure we have a diversified portfolio because you don't want to rely just on one thing. So I would support an all of the above approach to energy.
Sean McCann, how would you support clean energy in the state of Michigan?
I think it's at the point now where 99.9% of scientists agree that climate change is a real issue and a real threat. And that drives us, above all else, to do something about fossil fuels and carbon emissions. At the state level, we have an opportunity with a reset of our renewable portfolio standard coming up in 2015. And I see that as an opportunity to inject and increase as much clean energy presence into those standards as possible. We've come a long way. We have invested in wind. We've invested in solar. There's some interest in biomass. All these things have to increase our standard of clean energy. Otherwise, we basically have to wonder what kind of planet we're going to leave for our children and grandchildren. The last thing that I would say is that we just had a meeting last week that convinces me yet again that efficiency measures, ways to save and conserve existing uses of energy, is a great place to put our dollars, time, and energy. Because if we're insulating our houses better, if we're driving more fuel-efficient cars, that's going to help bring that balance around as far as protecting our environment goes and someday trying to preserve our climate.
Lawrence Winke, how would you promote clean energy in the state of Michigan?
My company burns close to $800,000 worth of natural gas every year in the wintertime, growing flowers. Natural gas is by far and away the cleanest fuel that we use, I believe anyway. And to get more natural gas, we're going to probably have to engage in fracking across the state of Michigan. We're going to have to do that very carefully. We're going to have to learn how to do it very environmentally friendly, if we don't know how already, which I think we do, but I'm not sure. I don't see much of it being done around here. But certainly the use of natural gas would do a great deal to clean up our environment. I was a little bit, when Western changed from a coal-fired boiler a few years ago to, I believe, natural gas, why, at that time I thought, why not keep them on coal and save the natural gas for the homeowner, the small business person, but apparently they found enough natural gas that we can burn a lot of it for a long time. I was one of the first people to buy or at least I bought a hybrid vehicle back in 2008 because I believe in hybrid vehicles. If you've ever been to California, you can see miles and miles of wind turbines. Seems to have some effect. I'm glad that there's experimenting going on across the nation with wind power and solar power. Hopefully it will turn out to be a cost-efficient way to produce energy.
Next question, we'll begin with Sean McCann. Would you support any changes to the current term limits in the state of Michigan?
I would support changes to term limits. I would support eliminating term limits. There have been proposals over the years since their enactment to modify or change them. Unfortunately, none of them have come to fruition yet. I view term limits as really a knee-jerk reaction to gerrymandered legislative districts. We have gotten to the point in Michigan where districts are drawn that are safe for one party or the other, and it really becomes difficult for the general electorate to have a say in an election once someone comes through the primary in basically a safe Republican or Democratic seat. So this artificial mechanism of term limits was basically advanced and successful and has had the real outcome of shifting people's representation and the balance of power in our state house, because they were termed illegally in the federal courts, of shifting power, knowledge, institutional wisdom to lobbyists and staffers. And the legislators come in, maybe they're there for 4 or 6 years. You're a mile wide and an inch deep on most topics when a lot of folks there are a mile deep on their specific particular area of expertise, and you're at a disadvantage. The last thing is that term limits generally would shift power to the executive and lessen the ability of representatives to be connected with people in their districts and have the ability to influence policy. So change or modify or eliminate is fine with me.
Lawrence Wenke, would you support any changes to Michigan's current term limits on state lawmakers?
Of the three people up here, I'm the only one who's lost his job due to term limits. And I'm glad I did, quite frankly. I support term limits. We citizens put that into our Constitution. We did the right thing. The only mistake we made is we picked the wrong number of years. We probably should have picked more like 10 years for representatives and 12 years for senators. We picked 6 and 8. It is too short. Sean McCain is right. Why we don't know it. It takes too long to learn the complexities of government. One thing I did learn in Lansing and in life is that government is a very complex thing, and we need excellent people, professional people to lead us in government. So I would not do away with term limits, but I would increase the number of years before it puts us out of office.
Margaret O'Brien, would you support any changes to Michigan's current term limits?
I don't support the legislature changing term limits. This needs to be a signature gathering process of the people. They are the ones who brought it to the ballot and overwhelmingly voted for it. So if the voters wish to change term limits, I am happy to abide by what they want. If they want term limits, that is fine with me. If they want to get rid of them, that's okay too. I really want the voters to decide what they want and not insert any personal will from me onto that process.
We have come to the time for closing statements, and we will begin with Lawrence Wenke. You have 1 minute for your closing statement.
Serving in the Michigan legislators was one of the great privileges of my life and one of the most interesting times in my life. When I more or less left my greenhouse business and became a county commissioner, then onto the state house, I realized how important government is in our lives, how it does very important things, and we need great people to lead our government. I'm not an anti-government person. I'm a pro-government person. We just have to make sure that we don't have any more government that we need. We need to make sure that it's as efficient as we can make it. Government costs a lot of money, and we citizens should be as reasonably certain as possible that we're getting good value for our dollars. I think I bring to Lansing this unique combination of private sector experience and government experience that helps me to make good decisions that have to be made in Lansing for the future of Michigan's economy and for the way we live. Thank you.
Margaret O'Brien, closing statement, 1 minute.
I think about 2010 and when I first ran for the State House, Michigan was leading in all the wrong categories. I'm a real estate agent. My clients were suffering. Sellers were selling their home for less than what they owed. Buyers couldn't even get a mortgage, and we kept hemorrhaging jobs out of state, and our young people were leaving the state in droves. Over the last 3.5 years, we have made hard decisions, because if it was easy to fix Michigan's problem, somebody else would have done it. That is my commitment to you, to keep making those hard decisions. Michigan has much more to do. We don't want to return to a broken state system where they passed taxes in the middle of the night, repealed that same tax in the middle of the night, and couldn't balance the budget by their constitutional deadline, and they kept doing mid-year cuts to schools and local government. We need to make sure we have a responsible and effective government. That's what I've done, and it would be my goal to keep providing that to you.
Sean McCann, closing statement, 1 minute.
Well, thank you for the opportunity for this forum. The Michigan legislature has been very hard on our middle class and working citizens in the past 3.5 years. You need to look at our records when you look at who you go to vote for this fall and who's voted to increase taxes on the middle class and cut education in our schools. I think if you ask any school teacher or parent, they'll see they don't see an investment in our schools. They see disinvestment. They see greater class sizes. They see teachers paying for their own textbooks and pencils. And that is not what we should be doing as a state of Michigan. So please look at our votes, look at our records, see if we do what we say. I believe that my values and my priorities align best with the 20th State Senate District. I think you can look at the legislation I've introduced and see that I'm a problem solver and someone who wants to tackle any issue that is presented. And I think you'll see that I'm willing to be bipartisan and vote for things that make sense, that are compromises that people are hungry for in Michigan because we've become so polarized. Thank you.
Greg Rosine.
I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight, and please, let's thank our candidates. One last word, remember to vote. Thank you.